Good times, yummy times. A couple of things as we continue from Joshua on into the book of Judges. I'm going to let you in on one of my struggles. Something that the members here have heard before. Something that you will hear often because it's a reality of who I am. One of the struggles I have is the fact that it's my job. It's my job to love you in the hard ways, in the difficult ways. It's my job to confront you with things that perhaps you don't want to be talked to about. It's my job to encourage you to do things that maybe aren't in your scope of everyday doing. All right, and that's a difficult process for me. One that I take on, I'm not afraid of, but I let you know up front that it's difficult to talk about things. Let me give you one that every pastor deals with, like tithing. All right? People don't talk about tithing that much unless they do a series on it, because nobody wants to hear, you need to give money, you need to give money, you need to give money, all right? But you've got to understand that when I do that, it's not for me. It's not for the bills, it's not to turn the lights on. We'll get that stuff done, okay? It's for you. Because it's something that God calls upon you to do, something that God asks you to do, something that you need to do. And I'm not promising you he'll do anything for it. There are other preachers out there you can go find who'll do that for you. Not I, okay? I don't do that. Does God want to bless you? Absolutely. Will he bless you if you follow his lead? Absolutely. Does that mean if you give money, you get more money? Absolutely not. Does not. Does that mean if I, you know, preach more, that more people will come? No. Does that mean if I invite more people will come? No. It's not reciprocating in the ways that you think. Will you be blessed beyond measure in ways that maybe you do not understand? Oh, in unfathomable. Okay? So a couple little things that I've decided that I'm going to tell you as a congregation that you need. Okay? You know, a lot of times we make lists of what the church needs, and it's like, we need chairs in the well, we need a ping pong table for the youth, we need light bulbs for... No, no, no. When I say, I'm going to tell you a couple of things that the church needs, you're the church. Not the building, you're the church. So there's a couple of things that the church needs. You need, okay, you need to celebrate regularly what God is doing in our church over the last couple of months. God is moving. Numbers, we told you it was coming. Numbers are increasing. Visitors are showing up. Last week, we were missing 30 people who are here three times a month. And somehow, we had the same number we had the week before that. All right? This week, there are at least 30 people who are here on a regular basis missing. And I'm going to guess we're up 5, maybe even 10 people from last week. Here's one more. We started small groups just 2 weeks ago. 2 weeks ago, we set out to get people involved. We spent 3 months planning for it, trying to make it happen. And we set out to get people involved in discipleship. And I've been told that if you can get half your church worship attendance involved in Bible study throughout the week, that's solid. We had 151 people in worship last week. We had 111 people in discipleship this week. That's unbelievable. That's celebrate, okay? So let me tell you something that the church needs. You need to find a Bible study. Because there's 50 of you who are missing out. Not because you need to spend another day in church and I've got stuff to do. So do I. I'm normal. Well, okay. Not a true statement, but you understand, alright? You, church, you need something outside of this celebration where people are listening to how you hurt, listening to what you're going through, standing next to someone who's been through a divorce, standing next to someone who's been criticized for their tattoos, standing next to someone who is having trouble with their 5-year-old, their 6-year-old, their 3-year-old, standing next to someone whose parent is also going through surgery. I'm not asking this for me. I'm telling you this for you. Does that make sense? You need to give regularly. And everybody in the church knows that I don't care how much you give.
Don't care.
It's not what you give. Church, what is it?
That
you give. It's not what you give, it's that you give. On a regular basis, are you saying to Jesus, here, thank you for all that you've done for me? $5? $500? You talk to God, you'll figure it out. You need to be in Bible study. You need to be tithing regularly. And you need to find a place where you can plug in. Okay? I don't care if it's cleaning the windows. I don't care if it's coming and helping an abnormal pastor organize himself. All right? I don't care if it's singing Christmas carols with our children. If it's going outside and getting some of the mulch that the four-year-olds throw out back in the playland. I don't care if it's getting involved with the homeless coalition, with a member of our congregation who is literally less than a week away from launching this. Woo! They're taking people through dinner at the homeless, not at the homeless shelter. And they're actually, it's ready to see, and they're letting the community come in so that they can get involved, okay? NBC is going to be involved with that. We are involved because Johnny is a part of our church family, all right? And we are meeting needs that don't come in all the ways that are normal. We're sending people, we send money when it's needed, we help out. And that's what we're going to keep on doing. You need to find a place where you can get involved serving. Okay? Now, let's talk about this book of Judges that we're in. I'll give you some things that are going on after the sermon, but that was more a part of the sermon. Okay? So we've come out of Joshua, we're going into Judges. There are a couple things that you need to recognize. I'm going to put these up there every week. All right? Number one is this. Joshua happens. We did that. That's God's people getting called out. Okay? They finally made it into the promised land. Okay? Alright, they wiped it out. And then you have the book of Judges. And the book of Judges happens over about 300 years before the first king of Israel. So there's a 300-year span where the people have found a place that they can call home, and nobody's really in charge. That is the book of Judges, okay? What is supposed to happen is all of God's people are supposed to focus on God. And they find themselves in Him. Here's the problem. Same problem that you have as an individual. Same problem that churches have as communities. Same problem that we all have when we mess up. We can't keep our eyes on God because we want something. We want another woman, another man, another child, another dollar, another job, another look at this thing on the computer. We desire something that is not God. And so we want it. And what happens in Judges, last week we saw that Israel did what was right in their own eye. We saw a nation that thought it was okay that everybody gets what everybody wants because now they're free. Do you smell any America in that? Anybody get a nice whiff of the stars and stripes in that statement? I can be gay, I can be straight, I can be black, I can be white, I can work a job, I can get taxes, I can cheat on my taxes, I can do anything that I want to because it's America, and I'm free. Problem, what happens when what you want goes against what they want? Who gets it? We're about 230 to 260 years into our freedom. And I told you last week what happened right around the year 300 with Israel. We got to be careful, guys. The last verse of the book of Judges said they did what was right in their own eyes because they had no king. Now, we have made a decision. Whether you have or not is irrelevant. We have made a decision here at NBC that Craig ain't going to be king. And everybody agrees whether they voted on it or not. Ain't nobody here says, oh no, I don't want to be king. No, alright, ain't going to happen, Gavin. Alright, Jesus is where we're headed. That's where we focus, alright? He's our king. Now, we're going to look at the people God uses in that time frame when everybody's messing up and some of the things that they do and what we can learn from those things. The first guy that steps up to the plate is a guy named Othniel. You've met him before. In Judges chapter 15, you remember there was a girl who got down off of her animal and knelt before her father, but didn't ask, requested that he gave her one who was given to Othniel. Othniel was a powerful warrior. He was a decathlete among all decathletes. He was the man, all right? He could fight and battle anyone. And in Judges, he goes and he slaughters this king basically on his own, and he gets the daughter of the man who said you can do it, all right? Well, in Judges, what we see is that Othniel goes and makes another battle, defeats in that battle, wins, and God gives the people peace. Because you know what they did right off the bat in chapter 2? They ran. Look up here. Next slide. It always goes like this. Disobedience, disaster, deliverance. Disobedience, disaster, deliverance. Right off the bat, didn't even take a couple years, Israel disobeyed. All right? That's basically what Judges chapter 2 is all about. An angel of the Lord came down and said, it didn't take y'all long ago to do what you wanted to do, and ignore me, now did it. All right? And you need to understand, and God caused the enemies to rise up around them. Caused them to go into oppression. And then the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord. They forgot the Lord their God. They served the Baals and the Asherahs, and the anger burned against them. And the king, Cushan, Rishathaim, Aram, Naharim, to whom the Israelites were subject for 8 years. For 8 years they became enslaved again. They were in slavery for generations. They got out of slavery, found freedom, and guess where they find themselves? Back in slavery. Why? Stupidity. Why do we do the things that we do? Didn't nobody yell out stupidity right then, but you know, you'd be like, stupidity. I ain't yelling out stupidity because that means I'm stupid. Aren't we? Thank you. One honest kid in the place, alright? The Spirit of the Lord came upon Othniel, and he became Israel's judge, went to war. The Lord gave Cushan Rishathaim, king of Aram, into the hands of Othniel, and the land had peace for 40 years until Othniel, son of Kenaz, died. Okay? So, God uses a mighty warrior. He lays his spirit on him. He rises up, and we just got one paragraph, a little less than one paragraph, about what God does through this champion to bring Israel peace. That's what the judges did. They were basically champions who, when Israel screwed up and cried out to God, when disaster came, all right, they were the human beings through which God brought deliverance, okay? This week we're going to focus on one named Ehud, or Ehud, depending on who you talk to and what redneck is saying, okay? E-H-U-D, all right, that's the guy we're going to talk about. This story is a hoot. And this is about how God provides in the little things. Now, some of you are going to know this story. Most of you aren't going to have heard this story. But it's a fairly decent one. I'm going to read it so you know that I'm not making this stuff up. And then I'm going to tell you the story about my way. All right. So once again, the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord. All right. Disobedience. And because they did, the Lord gave Eglon, king of Moab, power over Israel. Disaster. They become slaves to someone else again. Getting the Ammonites and the Amalekites to join in, Eglon attacked Israel, took possession of the city. The Israelites were subject for 18 years. You'd think we learned, but we never knew, do we? Anybody ever told that story? They tell somebody about something that happened in their life and how they're never going to do it again and how it's never going to change them. And then a few years later, they're telling someone the same story about how they're never going to do it again and they're never going to change them. And they're crying again because they're never going to do it again. Okay, Israel, UP. All right. Stupidity. Anyways, again, the Israelites cried out to the Lord, and he gave them a deliverer, Ehud, a left-handed man, the son of Gera the Benjamite. Why in the world do you include in the middle of the sentence, he was a lefty? God sent a champion. He was the son of, we all know all those things. The Bible always does that. But in between two commas is the word, he was left-handed. We'll get back to that. But it's in there, and there's a reason. And God knew it. And he's up there giggling again at his intelligence and how funny he is. All right. Ehud made a double-edged sword about a foot and a half long, 18 inches, strapped it to his right thigh under his clothing. Why do we get the anatomical location of where he stuck the knife? Again, this is God doing what God does to do things that only God can do. He presented the tribute to Eglon, king of Moab. He went into the king's palace to give him a gift, all right? He got one of those edible arrangements, all right? And took it to the king. He's like, oh, food. You know why he's like, oh, food? Because this brother's fat. I can't be politically correct here. I'm not going to say he's chunky. I can't do it. I'm not going to say he was round, all right? This brother was fat. Roll over roll over roll, called up yonder fat, all right? There's a reason for that. Presented a tribute, sent it on the way. At the end of the paragraph, he turned back and said, I have a secret message for you, king. So he gets on the way out, and he sees something that actually represents one of the turning points of Israel. The stones that were set up back in Joshua. He sees that, and he's reminded, like, now. It's kind of like God's whispering, you have an opportunity. Now's it. So he turns around, and he basically says to this really, really, really fat king, I need to tell you a secret. I have a word for you that no one needs to hear. He may have thought it was about war. He may have thought it was about something, you know. So he says, well, come into my chambers. Come in. So the king invites him in, and the king says, quiet. Ehud then approached him while he was sitting alone in the upper room of the summer palace, and he said, I have a message for you. He reached with his left hand to draw the sword from his right thigh, and he plunged it into the king's belly. When the handle sank in after the blade, Ehud did not pull the sword out because the fat closed in around it. Brother almost lost his arm. Then Ehud went out on the porch, shut the doors, and locked them. After he had gone, the servants came and found the doors locked. Listen, they said, there's a reason they say this, but this is funny. They said, he must be relieving himself. The new translation. I think he's in the pipe. Brother hasn't come out yet. There's a reason they say this. Oh, this is good. We find out later, if you put two and two together, why the windows are open and what the... Yeah. Wafting on. Yeah. They waited to the point of embarrassment. The Bible tells us. They get tickled. They're like, what do we do? And then they did not open the doors, but they took a key and unlocked them finally, and they saw their Lord fallen to the floor dead. Let me put this story together for you. Israel is being oppressed by this king, and instead of sending a mighty warrior, God finds a lefty to take on the hefty. Okay? God finds himself a lefty to take on the hefty. Now the question is why? Well, today that's no big deal. Alright? But back in Israel days, you didn't make war. When you go and like you're flat-footed, you don't get called into the army. Well, left-handed people would have never been called to fight because they were odd. They were different. They were almost handicapped. Now, if you watch them work and do all their, you know, nothing's different. But when they raise their arms in battle, you know, their guy's raising the wrong hand. When they pledge, it's all odd. So in Bible days, you were considered backwards or abnormal or even lower than the right-handed people. All right? So this guy was outcast because he was left-handed. So God picks him. And he picks him because this is such a policy that, like, when you go through, Miss Carol, she works down at the sheriff's office, okay? When you go into the sheriff's office, you have to go through the metal detector, and if it beep, beep, beeps, they got to come out, and they got to kind of wave the wand and check you and pat you down. Here's what would have happened. Everybody who would have gone to the king's palace would have gotten patted down. But here's what they would have done. They would have only patted his right side, or his left side. Why? Because a righty would reach over here to get the sword and pull it out, okay? So they would have gone and checked to see if there was a sword there, because nobody's going to send a left-handed guy to do any assassinating. They aren't in the military. God picked a lefty who tagged the sword to this side, and nobody checks. He walks right in with it. Huh! I'll be... So he gets in with this sword, 18 inches, down his right thigh. Nobody checks for it, all right? And he goes in, and he says, I gotta tell you a secret. So he takes him in to his chamber. This would have been very high up, okay, in the castle. It would have had an overlook that he could have seen the edge of the city coming in and going out, okay? And the doors would have been very heavy in there and then smaller on the inside. So they go back into this area, and the windows would have been open because he would have been looking out over the kingdom, all right? And that's where the air circling through is going to come in just a minute. And he says, I got to tell you a secret. And he reaches down with his left hand, and he plunges the sword in, and it goes all the way in. Arm, everything, in. You're welcome for the sound effects, okay? He lets go of an 18-inch sword with a handle that is completely inside this guy, pulls his hand out, okay? Here's what happens. Upon his death, he expels all over himself. Okay? So what happens is it's plunged into his intestines and his bowels release. And this really large man poops himself all over the place and then falls on the floor. Ehud goes out and down. There's a reason that all this happens. He needs time to get to the city gates. And once he gets outside the city gates, he will be free. Well, if anybody hears the king or finds the king, that won't happen. But because the guy's bowels release and the wind is blowing from the outside toward the inside of the castle where they're waiting outside the doors, after a long period of time, y'all know what happens. One brother looks at another brother and goes, you know they did. It's not a funny story, but it is. You know they did. King, and they come up with a very polite line. He must be relieving. You think? The other guy, if there's a guy like me out there going relieving, schmieving, that brother had Mexican food. And so they don't go in because they think the king is on the throne in a totally new way, all right? That's why they don't enter. After an embarrassingly long amount of time, you know they probably won't be going, you okay? You can't say it's everything all right in there because I can smell that it ain't. This is a great story. You think, oh, this is a great story. Because the guy, they don't come in and he gets away. And so when they finally open the door, they're like, oh. But he's dead. But they wait just long enough for Ehud to get out of town. And the Israelites are now free because the commander's not there. They're able to overcome because the leader is gone. Cut off the head, the rest falls. And that's basically how the story is. Now, here's the thing. Here are the nuggets. Remember, when God chooses someone, it's not always the biggest, the strongest, the prettiest, the fastest, the handsomest, the tallest, the baldest. It's not always the best, okay? It's not. In this particular case, God needed and chose a quaint, left-handed man who worked an everyday job with everyday chores. He just happened to be born with this side in control instead of this side. God chooses whoever is willing to be used. Church, do you hear that? Doesn't matter what you've done, where you've been, how you were born, what the color of your skin is, what the background that you have, how many mistakes that you have made. God chooses and uses those who are willing to be used to do amazing and wonderful things.
Amen.
And when he does, there are things that go completely unseen that show us that God always is in control and he always knows exactly what is needed, when it is needed, and how it is needed to accomplish his purposes. Nobody plans for the excrement attack. Nobody Nobody plans for the left side, right side, upside, downside, wind blowing through. Nobody. Only God can do it. If we want amazing things to happen, if you want to overcome that which continues to draw you back into destruction, to draw you back into disobedience, if you want to overcome the thing that Paul described as the thorn in his flesh, listen and listen clear. You cannot do it alone. You need to make a decision on your own that you're going to change. You need loving, non-judgmental, but firm and godly people around you who will point to you when you're heading in the wrong direction. And you need God to come alive in your heart and spirit and grant you that spirit of fear, not that spirit of power, love, self-discipline, not that spirit of fear. Do you understand? When those things happen, when those things happen, champions are born. Victories are won. Negatives are overcome. And God works how God wants to work, when God wants to work, for the people God wants to work for, His children. He wants to bless you. He wants to bless me. He wants to bless us. And He wants to use the least of us to do it. He wants to use the divorcee. He wants to use the overcomer of cancer. He wants to use the ones who've lost babies. He wants to use the ones who make bad decisions when they were teenagers. He wants to use the ones who have lost their jobs, who have lost their hope, who have lost their loved ones. He wants to use whoever's willing to be used. And those people become the champions, not just for themselves, but to bring peace to all of God's children. To bring peace to all of God's children. To bring peace to all of God's children. Church, we can live in peace if we obey. But when there is unrest, God will use the least of us to bring peace unto the rest of us. Please believe in you like I believe in you. Please believe in you like He believes in you more. Please believe in your neighbor like God believes in them. I know that parenting is hard. I know that life is difficult. Finances are tough. America is crazy. I know. I realize that we all think that it's about to expand. I know. But we just read a story about how it can be very helpful. Not be afraid of it. Remember, God is using the least of these to bring the best for us. The question is, do you trust Him to do that? Some trust in chariots, some trust in horses. We trust in the name of the Lord our God. Let Him be your champion, and we will overcome. And don't think for a minute that you can't make it fun. Alright? I love you. I love what He's going to do through you. I love the victories we're seeing. And I'm looking forward to more. We're going to pray, and then we're going to keep on celebrating a little bit. Alright? Bow your head, close your eyes. Cam and Ann are going to make their way up here. We'll take one song out of here. But before that, dear Jesus, thank you so much. Thank you so much for the stories that we didn't know.